It's fundraising week at Iowa Public Radio, and your gift today keeps IPR strong as we continue to tell the stories from where they happen and bring you vital reporting on this global pandemic. Make your gift now and make a real difference at iowapublicradio.org. Thanks.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 2020 has been a dark and difficult year, but in this time of great need, there have also been powerful acts of kindness. Today, we are going to focus on the kindness. We'll meet a woman from Cedar Rapids who started feeding people after the derecho hit in August, and she hasn't stopped. We'll meet a young man who felt the life-changing power of acceptance this year, and a woman who decided to help a homeless family by building them a new home, even though she had never done anything like that before. Our first story today starts with the kindness of children. Carter and Sydney Bell told their mom they wanted to do something to help people. Their mom, Erin Bell, is no stranger to helping people. Normally when she's on this show, we're talking about her job as the live mascot program director at Drake University, or Griff's mom, as she's also affectionately known. Through that program, she does a lot to coordinate volunteer and charitable work. So it may be no surprise that she sprang into action when her kids suggested it, and the results have been incredible. And since this started with Carter and his sister Sydney, we're going to start with Carter now. Carter Bell is on the line with me. Hello.
Hi.
So, Carter, tell me what you remember about how this started. You and your sister were telling your mom that you wanted to help people. Tell me about that.
Well, our mom said that we needed to make a piece of paper with, like, who and how and why and those kind of questions.
Right. So you decided you wanted to help people, and she said, okay, if we're going to help people, you guys need to make a plan, right?
And so we posted on social media, and a lot of really, really nice people gave us a lot of things for the refugees, including the following items: shirts, T-shirts, I already said shirts, pants, underwear, socks, toothbrushes, toothpaste.
Wow.
Soccer balls.
Yeah, so much stuff.
And I could keep going, but...
So I'm going to talk to your mom about some of the details of how all of this happened, but I know that for the last few days, you've been helping to deliver all of these things to families who really needed some help and needed some warm winter clothes and important things like that. Can you tell me a little bit about what you've been experiencing the last couple of days?
Well, our latest stop was with a home where three refugee families lived together. So me and my sister brought boxes and bags of things that people have donated to the doorway, and one of the refugee moms cried because she was so overwhelmed and happy.
Wow, that must feel really good. Do you feel proud?
Yeah, we feel very proud.
That's so good.
And thankful.
Yeah.
And thankful to the people who have donated and the people who are going to donate. We did our last video after we delivered to those three refugee families.
You mentioned the being grateful to the people who have helped you make this happen. And I've been watching the videos that you and your sister have been making all along. And it looks like there has been stuff arriving at your house every day since you started doing this. What has it been like?
Well, one day that we didn't get any stuff, but the rest of the days we have gotten loads or small amounts. Either way, we have gotten very generous donations, big or small. One time we got two TVs, and another time we got a crib. One time we got a lot of bars of soap, Another time we got toothbrushes, and so on and so on. So,
my goodness,
it's been great, and we love seeing the things that they've given us.
Yeah. Well, Carter, good work. I hope you tell your sister Sydney that I think that both of you have done a really great job. And does this make you want to help more people in the future?
Yes, it does. My sister is looking forward to helping the homeless people, which is a lot more complicated.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carter, thank you so much for talking with me. And would you hand the phone to your mom now?
Hi, Charity.
Hello, Aaron. Thank you for being here. And now, Carter did a really good job of telling us how this started. But can you fill in just a few of the details for me? Yeah. You've said that this started with the kids. Tell me what happened from your perspective.
Yeah, so we were just talking about, you know, the holidays. And as the holidays were approaching, we were just kind of thinking that as a family, we should try to do something to help less fortunate people in our community. And I wanted it to be the kids' project and for them to take ownership of it. So we just started from the basics of like who we were going to help, how we were going to do it, what things we needed in order to help them. So we put together a plan, and that plan definitely changed and evolved over the course of the project. But it ended up being a much bigger undertaking than any of us anticipated.
And you guys together decided that you wanted to help refugee families in Des Moines. Can you tell me just a little bit about how you found out about the families that you've ended up helping?
The kids, we talked about different marginalized populations, and the kids chose refugee families as who they wanted to help this time around. I am always following Des Moines Refugee Support, which is a local nonprofit that helps refugee families. It's largely Des Moines public school teachers that are taking on this project, and but other people too. And I love their work. I love what they do. I admire them so much. So I have always followed them and contributed in smaller ways. So we decided to help them. They do an annual distribution of just basic hygiene items and coats and hats and mittens and things like that at different apartment buildings where there's a large refugee population. And so that's how this all started. We collected items to be distributed at that mass distribution. So, and then it turned into taking on multiple families that have just arrived in the United States.
Now, you are a person who has a pretty big network. And once Carter and Sydney put together their first video asking for people to participate, what was the response like?
The response was overwhelming. It was huge, and it was far-reaching for sure. We received donations from across the country, literally. I am very fortunate to have such generous people supporting this effort. They've really stepped up, and it's been really cool to see the number of people that have been involved in this. And then also we've had, you know, I've had people donate 2 times or 3 times or even 4 times. It's like every time I ask for something, people just step up, and it's just been really, really amazing to see.
Give me an idea. I mean, Carter, again, did a great job telling us about some of the many things that have arrived on your doorstep mm-hmm. and at your house. But you basically filled up half of your garage mm-hmm. with donations. Tell me how many families you've been able to help and really how much you've been able to help each family.
Yeah, so with the distribution that was at the 5 apartment buildings, that was huge. And that was kind of like the first phase of this project. And so that filled up our garage. It was like completely full with that stuff. And then that stuff moved out on December 6th. That stuff was distributed. And then we just started to focus on these families. And we kept getting asked to help additional families as people learned that we were doing this. So we ended up helping 5 families, like completely new families to the United States within, you know, the last month or two, with the most basic of items like shoes instead of flip-flops and boots and coats and all that stuff, pots and pans, towels, bedding, that kind of thing. And then we've helped probably three additional families with more specific things, mainly winter wear, winter gear. So, so it's been really amazing. I'm so overwhelmed by the generosity and by all that people have given throughout this whole project.
And you've also had the opportunity to see the families that you're helping face to face. And I think, you know, a lot of times when we make donations to something, we don't actually get to see that connection, that part of the connection. What has that been like?
Yeah, I have loved that for myself, but even more so, I've loved that my kids have been able to see who they are helping and see that they are kids just like them. These are families just like ours, you know, with the same needs, the same desires for their children, you know, the same goals in life. So I think that has been really special. And it's also just, it's motivated me to continue helping and to help even more and to give them everything I possibly can come up with, because I see, you know, I see who they are and that they are just people just like us that have the same needs.
You, of course, received a lot of gratitude, and I know you're not in this for the gratitude. You're doing this to make a difference. But you received an email from one of the moms of the families that you were able to help just over the weekend. Can you tell me about that note that you received?
He's unable to walk without crutches. He's got something wrong with his legs. And he was just sitting there at the table, and he was just beaming. He was so overwhelmed with everything. And he sent an email overnight just expressing how much he appreciates us helping his family as they try to start their lives over here in the United States. And it was quite the email. I didn't need that thank you note, but that thank you note just motivated me more than ever to keep doing everything I can to help these people, because it really is appreciated and definitely makes a difference.
Erin, thank you so much for talking with me and also for making this happen. This is really beautiful.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking time to hear about it.
Erin Bell, I also spoke to her son, Carter Bell. The Bell family has been working to help refugee families in Des Moines, and you can find out more about helping families like the ones we've been talking about through Des Moines Refugee Support. You can follow them on Facebook. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Once upon a midnight weary, artists of Iowa discovered something quite dreary. In a pandemic year, an evil villain is out to steal the holiday cheer.
No live entertainment? Get out! No way! I'll save it myself if I have to. I'll do it today.
Join Iowa Public Radio Studio One and XBK for The Holiday Special, an original musical for a pandemic year, at 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 20th.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're taking some time to recognize acts of kindness, acts that feel even more vital and important during this difficult year. In the wake of the derecho in August, there was no power and a lot of hungry people in Cedar Rapids. Bridget Robinson didn't want the meat in her freezer to go to waste, so she started feeding people and started what would become Bridge Under the Bridge. She is here with me now. Hello, Bridget.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here. And let's go back in time to that terrible day on August 10th. Where were you during the derecho?
In my car with my family.
Oh, my goodness. And you have quite a few kids. How many kids do you have?
Seven.
Seven kids. Were they all with you?
Six of them were with me, myself and my husband, and my oldest son was at Dairy Queen in Hiawatha, actually at work.
Oh, my goodness. What was that like to weather the storm with six kids in the car? That must have been so terrifying.
Terrifying. It was a long ride home. We were at their grandpa's house, and we had to make it from 16th Street on the southeast side to our house on 8th Avenue. And it's a long 8-minute ride and a terrible storm.
Oh, my goodness. But, of course, there was no power for a long time after the storm, and you had a pretty full freezer. Tell me what happened next.
We saw our neighbors started pulling out grills and you know, it had been a long summer already, and we were not going to eat burgers and hot dogs like everyone else. So we decided to grab all that stuff and start making things that we like, you know, comfort food. We had a flat top grill that my husband's father bought us, and we just invited our neighbors out. We had our kids make little cute signs that said free food, and they would wave them like the little flag people that stand on the corners, and they had a good time doing that. And people start coming and asking, you know, hey, you guys are just giving this food away. And we just were out there and trying to hang out, trying to not be in the hot house while the lights were off and just help everybody.
Wow. Well, you must have run through the contents of your freezer pretty quickly. But then what happened?
So day 10, we are at the grocery store, and I told my husband, you know, this isn't going to be a thing we can keep going. We're probably going to not be able to do this after today.
Right. You have seven kids of your own. You have a lot of people in your own house to feed.
Exactly. So after we figured we'd go through the meat that we had, we would have to make sure that we could eat day to day. So we were going to have to grocery shop and cook for our own meal. And the donations just started pouring in. We had so many wonderful people just come by, and we're grateful that we were helping their neighbors. And some people brought food donations. Some people brought monetary donations for us to buy food. And it just spiraled into this big, huge pot of love that we could just serve up.
Wow. Well, and so tell me a little bit more about your location. As I mentioned, the name of the group that you founded is Bridge Under the Bridge. And you literally feed people under a bridge.
Literally under a bridge. It's on the corner of 8th Avenue and L Street. So we're next to the Juvenile Justice Center. We actually it's their parking lot right under the 380 interstate.
And why did you choose to set up there?
We live, you know, half a block away, and it's a nice open space that we felt like we could invite our neighbors, and everybody could still be kind of socially distant, as, you know, it's still COVID, but we have seven kids that want to run and jump and play, so they could ride their bikes, they could ride their scooters, they could play with their skateboards, and we put up our basketball hoop there, and it actually still lives there, so when we come and hang out.
Nice. And as this continued, you know, people started getting back on their feet, and power came back on, and things got cleaned up. What made you keep going?
People weren't actually back on their feet. Mm. You know, if you had $300 or $400 worth of groceries in your fridge, you had to throw those away. And then you went another 10 to maybe 20 days with no lights that you had to depend on how to sustain and how to get by. So you might have spent, you know, a few $100 in a hotel room because you had a small kid that you couldn't afford to be for them to be hot, or, you know, whatever the circumstance is, people didn't have means to just pick up and everything was all better. There's always been food insecurities. People just hadn't talked about it, and it hadn't been a widespread subject that I hope now can be addressed, and people can see that it's not just, oh, your lights are back on, so now your life is fixed.
Yeah. Do you feel like there is something about the way that you are serving these meals that maybe makes people feel comfortable to come and get the help they need when maybe they wouldn't be comfortable asking in another way?
Well, I hope so. We have a no questions asked policy. You don't have to tell us that you made $100,000 last year, but now, you know, your job laid you off because of COVID, or your roof completely blown off and you didn't have enough money to cover your insurance deductible. It doesn't matter. If you need this food, you just come and let us know. You know, I have seven people at my house and I need a hot meal for everybody. And that's just what it is. There's a lot of places that ask way too many questions. You shouldn't have to qualify to need a free meal.
Now that it has gotten cold, have you changed your setup?
Yes. we have a little bit more barrier between us and the wind. We try to shield ourselves a little bit. We're not out as long as we used to be. We used to be out from noon to 9 p.m. during the summer just to, you know, be out there and we could hang out. But now we're out from about 1 p.m. and we start serving at 3. And then between, you know, 5 and 7, depending on how cold or how dark it is, we kind of wrap it up just because if I get sick or my husband gets sick and then our kids get sick, that's, you know, one less day we can be out, or, you know, that precaution that we have to make sure we take.
As an incredibly busy mom of 7 kids, I can't imagine that this is something you really would have dreamed that you'd be doing in 2020. What made you decide not just to step up on that first day, but to stick with it?
Being a mom, first and foremost, you have a different spot in your heart for people. You know, you see people come with their kids and the sigh of relief of not having to worry about that kid being able to be fed before they go to bed. It's a different feeling, but we have been homeless and I have had so many hard days making sure my kids are fed. And I want to make sure that we continue to be that blessing for somebody else.
What a powerful experience for your kids to be a part of this, too. What have you seen in them as they've been able to help people?
They talk about us in their online learning. My kids are so proud that they're a part of this. They tell all their friends about it. My 8th grade son, his teacher actually had all the kids pick a public figure, and she actually chose me. Oh, to write reports for her kids in school, like her social studies class. They wrote essays about me, and it just was so awesome to know that I impacted that many people.
Wow, that's so cool. So what comes next for you? What do you see as the future of Bridge Under the Bridge?
Well, we would like to get our mobile soup kitchen rolling. So we want to get a food trailer and be able to move around the city and help different sides of town, people that might not be able to get out to get us, you know, to get meals or, you know, that type of situation. Like, we want to be able to set up on different areas of town to help the people that maybe we haven't been able to help before.
How does this change how you think about yourself? I mean, as you said, you've been somebody who's been in some really hard situations in the past and maybe never thought you'd be the one helping others.
I never imagined that we would be able to help anybody. This experience has changed everything that I've ever thought about in, you know, the world. Being such an impactful situation and being able to take something so good out of it.
Do you have any advice for other people who maybe have felt helpless to help in the past, but just might have something to offer?
You just have to do it. Don't think about it. Don't think about how maybe you can't help. Just help however you can help. Because even if it's $1 to, you know, somebody you see walking with a bag or a bike, that dollar might have changed their day. It's not about how much you can help. It's about the way you help.
Bridget Robinson of Cedar Rapids has fed thousands of people since the derecho in August. She is the founder of Bridge Under the Bridge. Acceptance can be an incredibly powerful act of kindness. That's something Sebastian Price learned firsthand this year when he came out to his family as transgender. He's a student at the University of Northern Iowa, and he's on the line with me now. Hello, Sebastian.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for talking with me. And as it is for so many people, I know that coming out has been a process for you. And at first, you found it easier to come out to people who were not members of your family. Can you tell me a little bit about how that went?
Yeah, of course. I came out to my friends first, and they were extremely supportive. And then I went to come out to my high school teachers. This was all in my sophomore year of high school. And my band directors were essentially like, okay, yeah, you're the same person, different name, did you practice at all this summer? And I had to like run out of the band office because no, I had not. And I came out to my government teacher, and within the hour, he responded with an email telling me that if I ever needed anything, I could come to him and he'd support me. Wow. So I had an overwhelming amount of support from most of my teachers and all of my friends, and it was an incredible feeling.
But coming out to family felt like it was going to be a lot harder, and that's something that you did this year.
Yeah, I know my family loves me, and I always have, but there's always that inherent fear that I could lose something that means the world to me, mm-hmm. and that would hurt more than anything I could ever imagine. So my parents actually found out when I was in high school, and we just never talked about it. It wasn't something that was brought up, but eventually, earlier this year, I think it was late October, I woke up one day and I was like, I can't keep doing this. I can't hide part of myself from the people who love me the most. If they don't love me for this, you know, oh well, I have to come out. So I came out to a few select family members, and then I came out to one of my aunts who ended up sending screenshots of the text I sent to my mother. And my mom called and she was like, I got some interesting texts from your aunt. And immediately I was defensive because I didn't know what to expect. I said, you know, I don't care if you're upset with me about this. This is something I needed to do. I'm not happy. I don't feel like myself. I don't want to have to hide for the rest of my life. And I started crying, and she kind of pulled me back together, and she was like, you know, I just want you to be happy. That's what it comes down to, is I just want you to be happy. So knowing that I had her utmost support was very, very important to me.
Yeah.
And my dad is kind of the quiet support type of person. When I received a few homophobic messages from a family member, he was like, well, I tried to educate her, you know, and I had no idea he had talked to her at all. He's not the loudest with his support, but knowing that he's firmly standing behind me and loves me is all the support I need.
You also got a particularly lovely response from your brother. Tell me about that.
My brother is amazing and horrible, and I love him very much. Older brothers know how to make you cry, yeah. whether it's in the best or worst ways. So after I came out, I got a text from him saying, you know, I didn't want this message to get lost in with the rest of them, but I love you and I'm proud of you. And your nephew is excited to have an uncle.
Wow.
And I cried like an infant.
Why do you eyeballed. Think that was so powerful?
There's something about older siblings, especially my relationship with my brother. We haven't been best friends, but like his support means the world to me. He is everything I wanted to be when I was a kid. And to have that really kind of unexpected message come through, and to know that the little family he made away from us loves me just as much as my family does, just hit me like a ton of bricks.
He also gave you a new nickname to go with your new name, right?
Yeah. He was streaming a video game with his friend, and I hopped on the stream because I missed him. And he was like, oh, it's Seabass. Hi, Seabass. And kept talking to me throughout the stream. And like, I'd never have a nickname given to me by family members before. So to have that moment of, oh, now I'm Seabass. Just, I was smiling for the rest of the day. Wow. I didn't even tell him about it, but to know that he was like, okay, you know what? Enough acceptance to give the kid a nickname.
I can imagine how good it felt to finally be yourself with your family and to get this kind of acceptance. But have you been surprised by how much it means to you? Is it even more powerful than you expected?
Honestly, yeah. Because, you know, before I came out, I had prepared myself for the worst. You always hope for the best and prepare for the worst. So I had this mentality that it'd either be, you know, nonchalant tolerance or downright horrible. And then I made a Facebook post about it, and there wasn't a single negative comment. And I had someone text me and say, if anyone says anything, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And then, like, my parents just being there for the whole thing and being like, okay, just ignore anything that comes in that's negative. You don't need to worry about that. Let it roll off your shoulders. You got this. And then calling my brother and having him bring his kid up and having his kid call me Uncle Sebastian to my face. You know, every time something good happens, I get overwhelmed because I just spent so long preparing for the worst.
Really life-changing acceptance.
Honestly.
Sebastian Price is a student at the University of Northern Iowa. He came out to his family this year as transgender. And this hour, we're talking about acts of kindness. More to come in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. 2020 has been a hard year for so many and for so many reasons. But in this year of hardship, there have also been some extraordinary moments of kindness. When the derecho struck on August 10th, things got a lot harder for many Iowans. Downed trees, damaged roofs, crushed vehicles, no power. Some families even lost their homes. It was a true crisis for many, and thousands of Iowans and people from outside the state reached out to help. Kendra Aris of Palo, Iowa, is one of those people. In the wake of the derecho, she started coordinating volunteers, opened up a food pantry, and then she met a woman whose family had lost their home and decided she could do even more. Kendra is on the line with me now. Hello, Kendra.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And let's go back to August 10th. How did you experience the derecho?
In my basement with my kids, next to the window, filming most of it.
how did your family come through it?
A terrible idea.
Yeah, absolutely. How did your family come through it?
You know, we came through it incredibly blessed, where literally our next door neighbors had, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of damage. We lost some trees, but we had just a bent soffit.
Wow, that's incredible.
And really, really lucky.
Yeah, it's such a crazy storm that some people lost everything and others of us made it through almost unscathed. So after the storm, you sort of sprang into action. Tell me what you started doing.
Well, my husband is the mayor in Palo, and he's not had this gig for very long, just a year in November. And so we obviously knew we had to get into action to help in a lot of ways. And I am I'm a farm kid and a get your hands dirty kind of person. So I decided I was going to learn to use a chainsaw and ended up, you know, coordinating volunteers for our town to get cleaned up, and spent 33 days running a chainsaw.
Oh my goodness.
Fun. I really enjoyed learning and meeting all of the people in town that I'd never met before, and you know, meeting volunteers and people coming in from out of town to help, and like all of that was really heartwarming and energizing. And it, you know, like I said, I didn't have much for damage, so maybe there's a little survivor guilt there that was like, well, I'm going to help my neighbors since I don't have to help myself.
When did you meet this family from Shellsburg that lost their home? Can you tell me how you made that connection?
Yeah. It was a month later, and at our food pantry, we had several people coming from the trailer park in Shellsburg, which is only 4 or 5 miles from Palo, and they were coming and using our food pantry. And you know, as time went on, and we cleaned up our town, and then we kind of started moving into the rural areas. Toward the end of that, I decided I'm going to go check out that trailer park and see how they're faring. And when I arrived, it was a month later, literally looked like they had very little cleaned up. They had more than very little cleaned up, but it was worse before I got there. But they were struggling and, you know, they're not part of an incorporated town or anything like that. So they didn't have a lot of resources. The management there was brand new from out of state and, you know, really didn't know what resources to go to either. So I decided to help them get cleaned up, got in touch with some people that had helped us clean up, you know, in Palo. And then I, in the process of cleaning up in those 3 days or so, I met Lisa, who was living in a pop-up camper with her two kids. And I was just like, oh, this is not acceptable. She's certainly a low-income family that just found herself in the cracks of the system, to be honest. And when we exhausted all other avenues, I decided to talk to the management of the trailer park and see if there was something in the trailer park that had been sitting there that was maybe salvageable to turn into a home for her, because her home was not salvageable. Her home was off of basically off of its foundation, and it had a tree through the roof. So there was no rescuing that place. And they said, yeah, we got this one place, pretty bad. If you want it, we'll give it to you. And I was like, cool. So I took it, and then I really didn't know what I was getting into, but I got the keys and then started rehabbing it from there.
Had you ever done anything like this before, rehabbed a property?
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so you had no idea what you were getting into here, just taking on a full trailer that needed a lot of work.
Yes, not a clue. I've never worked like a hands-on job in my life. You know, I'm a makeup artist, a hairstylist by trade. I work in sales and I own a women's empowerment conference. Like, I'm very much not a hands-on person, but I've seen other people do things like this. You know, I'm on TikTok. I've seen people do some crazy things, and I was like, well, how hard can it really be? And so I connected with some resources, and the one that I was so important was the Mennonite Disaster Service of Iowa. There's a man named Ted Redding that was a school teacher in Iowa, and he's retired now, and he's I believe he's 76 years old, and he had helped us clean up from the derecho and told us that they rebuild people's homes when they need them after natural disasters. And so I had asked him if he would help, and he initially told me no because he said they don't work on mobile homes. But thank God he had a change of heart and ended up being really the catalyst for me being able to complete it so quickly. He brought a tool trailer full of tools, every tool you could possibly imagine, and then his know-how. And he came every day for about 45 days. And then after that, when I needed him, but he usually left his tool trailer there for me to use. And he helped me gut it and take all the old, it was in bad shape. We had to take it down to the studs and the floorboards, and it needed everything from a new roof to siding and all new windows, electrical, plumbing, floor, insulation, you name it.
You managed to turn this trailer that was in terrible condition into a beautiful home for this family.
Well, it started off with networking, and, you know, part of my job, I do a lot of social media marketing and networking, and, you know, it's part of my career and part of my success in my career. So I put all of that to work, and, you know, I just told people about it. And the power of telling a powerful story is in making everyone a part of it. So it was really a community effort where people were looking for a place to help and a place to make an impact. And with all the things going on right now, in, you know, not just the derecho, but COVID and everybody's lives kind of being shut down, like those avenues to help weren't as obvious. People aren't really sure what to do. So I think it gave people an opportunity to make an impact and to be a part of the story. And they showed up, and it was great.
Absolutely. Well, and I mean, tell me about the finished product, because you managed to also get help from Habitat for Humanity. And I've watched the video on your Facebook page of the boys and the family seeing this trailer for the first time. And it's really a beautiful home. So yeah. Tell me what you managed to accomplish.
Well, I mean, we furnished the entire home from, it wasn't just structurally done. We were able to furnish the entire thing from, you know, appliances and washers and dryers, but also like every little thing down to toothbrushes and shampoo. And that was all through donations and people fulfilling this Amazon wish list, which I was, you know, constantly having to add things to, which was both annoying and a huge blessing at the same time. So we were, you know, beds and sheets and pillows and, because they really lost everything, and whatever they had left in their home wasn't safe to because of mold and water damage and things like that. And I don't know, I just felt like she needed a new, just a hand up and a new start and a, you know, something fresh. And she never asked me for anything except for three things along the way, which is how I knew I was in the right place and helping the right family. She said, "I would love to have a screen door so I can open the house up and have a breeze blow through and hear the kids play outside." And she said, "I would love to have a extra outlet in my teenage son's room because he plays this video game and I'd love to give that to him." They had that, mobile homes often don't have enough outlets. And then she said the boys would love the color blue in their bedroom. And it was just such simple requests. That was all she ever asked me for. And so it was really cool to be able to just, you know, blow those requests out of the water and give her a fresh start.
You did have
a hard time before the storm, you know?
Yeah. You did, you know, this is not a woman that you knew well when you decided to help her. And you did have people say, "Why are you doing this for someone that you barely know? And do you know that this is somebody you can trust and that they're not taking advantage of you and things like that?" What was your response to that?
I don't know. I would say it was more of a gut feeling than anything else. But at the end of the day, I was like, I think every human being deserves a hand up at some point in their life. And regardless of what they've been through, and maybe knowing all of those, you know, can I trust this person? And what if they do this or that with the place afterwards? You know, I got a lot of that. What if they sell it? What if they take all their stuff and just, you know, get rid of it? Or what if they trash it? And at the end of the day, it wasn't about what happened after the possession wasn't mine. It was, you know, about the impact. And I just think about those kids and how their life could possibly change forever because an entire community said, "We believe in you and we want you to have a fresh start."
How do you think this experience, I mean, you have really, really helped this family and given them just an incredible gift at this moment. And as you mentioned, probably affected the trajectory of the lives of the young people in this family for sure. But how do you think that this experience, being able to give this gift with the help of so many others, has changed you?
It's really good to see that there is a greater good that exists in people, even when things feel so out of control and things are, you know, so politically charged. And it's not all, that's just surface level. And deep down, I think people are way better than that. And so it was good to have that proof. It was good to see people that believed in me enough to trust me with this, because I didn't have, you know, a 501c3 to back me up or any, you know, proof that I was going to take this money and
do what you said you would do, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it was great to know that people trusted me and that they believed in me. And it was just, that part is really forever changing, I think, to understand what your own impact in the world is and that, you know, you can kind of change that trajectory with everyone together.
That is so powerful. What do you think the future holds for you? Is this something that you think maybe you can do more of?
Yeah, I do, actually. And I have committed to helping Habitat for Humanity with a project next summer. I do think that going through an organization that knows what they're doing is probably a better idea.
You were very successful, but that sounds like an important lesson.
I think I've got some new skills to use, and, you know, I'm excited to put them to use. I did get to help my husband install a dishwasher the other day, and I gotta say, I knew a thing or two.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool.
I'll bet you know a whole lot. Oh, Kendra, thank you so much for your kindness and your courage in doing this. And thank you for talking with me.
Absolutely. Thanks for sharing the story. That's important, too.
Kendra Aris is the founder of Project 90. She made sure that at least one more Iowa family is home for the holidays this year. And just as the derecho of 2020 created a lot of need, it was also a catalyst for so much kindness. When we reached out to listeners asking for stories of kindness, we were inundated with stories of neighbors helping neighbors after that terrible storm. Rita wrote, "One of my trees took out the front of my neighbor's house. The other tree was blocking the road. My neighbor had a bunch of his friends come help him get the tree off his house. Then they also proceeded to cut up all my trees and haul them to the curb. What an act of kindness. I'm a widow with no one to help me, and I was so very grateful. The other neighbor's son and girlfriend cut and hauled huge tree limbs that were on my fence and helped me disassemble a metal shed and haul it to the curb. Right after the storm, they came running into my house to make sure I was okay. 10 days without power, and they were all there to make sure I had hot meals and shared anything they cooked. I don't know what I would have done without these kind, caring people." There's also this story from Danny. "This whole year was rough for my family. My baby was born right before COVID, February 7th. The lockdown made things pretty bad, and then the derecho happened. My house was destroyed, and my family of 2 adults, 3 children, 2 dogs, and a cat were homeless instantly. We lived with family for 3 months until a home finally became available for rent that would fit our family's needs. Shortly after that, in a free page on Facebook, a lady in my neighborhood offered to send my stepson a birthday card and gift. That lady is named Carolyn Weber, and she has donated so much to my family. She gave us chairs for our table, dishes, a birthday gift for my stepson, ornaments, Christmas decorations, and most importantly, a friendly person to talk to. She was my family's angel." Here are a few more derecho stories.
This is Matt Kenny from Cedar Rapids. This is a story about my friend Ken Grozinger from my hometown in Shannon, Illinois. He heard about the derecho hitting Cedar Rapids, saw pictures of all the damage done, and decided to load up his chainsaw and come over here for a day. The guy's a cancer survivor and a Vietnam War vet, and he's in his 70s. And he's a hero for all those reasons. He came to Cedar Rapids and helped for a day just because he could, and he felt compelled to do so.
So one of the nurses I worked with for several years at Mercy in Cedar Rapids had moved to Madison, and she was so heartbroken seeing her hometown and where her family lived be destroyed that she loaded up her car. It was filled to the rim of tarps and gas and water and food and that. And she had reached out to me because she had seen on Facebook that, you know, I had a broken foot and was struggling. And she stopped by my house with supplies. It's something I'll never forget.
My name is Mary Booman. So we didn't have power for probably 10 days. You know, little by little, every day we'd go out and work, and my neighbors, they each came and helped remove some of the debris from my yard. But then my neighbor, he knew how much I liked coffee. So every morning he would just bring me a nice hot cup of coffee. You don't realize how much you miss that hot cup of coffee.
Those were the voices of Matt Kenny, Stephanie Healy, and Mary Booman, all residents of Cedar Rapids, describing acts of kindness they received from their neighbors following the August derecho. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Happy holidays.